You have gone back, I mean way back, for some UFO cases and possible examples to when? The Roman Empire days, don't you?
Right. Even earlier, we had a couple, we found a couple cases where Alexander the Great, when he was in the process of conquering the known world back around 300 BC, he was he had two instances where UFOs, you know, came into play with what he with one of his campaigns. Well, one of them was he was in eastern Persia and he was about to cross a strategic river. His army was made up of thousands of foot soldiers, but also lots of horses and war elephants. And just as they were about to ford this river, these as his people traveling with him described them as flying shields, appeared and they began buzzing his army, and it to the point where they scared the war elephants and the horses, and the horses and the war elephants would not cross the river. And his campaign kind of came to a halt right there. 2 years later, he was laying siege to the city of Tyre, which is off of which is in present-day Lebanon, and there was it's a city that was built out in the harbor, and his troops were building a causeway out to the city to attack it, and these flying shields showed up again and began orbiting the city, and then one of them let out a lightning bolt, as the story goes, and destroyed one of the walls and allowed Alexander's armies to get in and to take the city. So that's our first one that we came upon where it was actually a wartime sighting of UFOs. And then when we go to 300 A.D., Constantine I was in a battle, was about to do battle with a rival, and the prize was going to be who was going to control the Roman Empire. And his army was smaller than his rival's, but the day before, a UFO showed up over their encampment, and it was in the shape of a cross. He saw it, and a lot of the people in his army saw it, and that he took that to mean that he took that as a sign, and so what he did is he told all his warriors to put a cross on their shields, thinking if they did that, he would win the battle. Well, it turns out he did win the battle, about you know, against all odds the next day, and he became the Roman Emperor, and he the first thing he did was make Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire, and you know, who knows what history would be like if that didn't happen.
That's true. How did you find these case studies from way gone back?
We just went, first of all, I had a lot of UFO books here, you know, anyway, but I went out and I bought every UFO book that I could find that I think I hadn't read, and plus just did hundreds of searches on the net. And the idea was just to get as much information as possible and distill it down into the 70 or so episodes that we finally put in the book.
That's fantastic. Now, let's jump ahead just for a little bit about sightings during wartime in the 20th century. Do these craft, or whatever they are, do they get involved, or are they much like observers?
For the most part, they were like observers. The instances I just gave of Alexander the Great, those are the rare cases. For the most part, people see them either during wartime or when we're ramping up to go to war. I can give you an example of in 1909, there was a, for 1 year, they had the scare ships in England. And what that was people started seeing what looked like Zeppelins flying over England, but they were moving very fast. They were moving about 200 miles an hour. They were they would fly against the wind. They had huge searchlights from the, on the bottom shining on the ground below. They were only seen at night. And as it turns out, the Germans did not have any Zeppelins that were capable of flying to England until 1914, and now we're in 1909. And people saw these things all over the place. But they didn't. They thought they were spy ships, but you don't spy with two big searchlights hanging from the bottom of your aircraft.
And these dirigibles didn't go that fast. They still can't go that fast,
can
they?
They can go about 50 miles an hour these days. But
yeah.
The two British newspapers stationed reporters in two different cities, and the first reporter saw one, and then he started the clock going, and then the scare ship was seen 20 minutes later at another city, and by, you know, triangulating, I guess you'd call it, they found out that the scare ship was going about 200 miles an hour.
God, that's unbelievable. So who called them scare ships?
The media, the British media really jumped on the story, and they coined the term the scare ships.
Well, that's probably a good term, but did that include early Men in Black stories?
Well, there is the earliest Men in Black story that we could find, you know, of that nature was during the Scarship Crisis. A gentleman who lived on a cliff looking out over the English Channel saw a Scarship one night, and then the next day he was out on his property. He found this strange object. He described it as a soccer ball with a metal rod shoved through it. He didn't know what it was, so he contacted the local authorities, and the Coast Guard and the British police came up and looked at it. They had no idea what it was, so they asked him to hold on to it until the British military could see it. So he did that, and in between the time that the British military actually came and saw the object and took it away, this man's servant, house servant, was going out one day, and she saw these two men dressed in black kind of hanging around his property. They were looking around the area on the cliff where he had found this object. Then they searched his barn where he had stored the object, and according to her, they, as I said, they were dressed in black, and they were speaking some strange language, and they scared her, and I think that she scared them a little bit, and they left the area. But it's funny how that, and then later on, lots of people started seeing these men dressed in black who would be always around areas where Scarships had been seen that night. So, you know, who knows who they were, what they were doing, but really kind of an early Men in Black story there.
As we get into some of these case studies, Mac, we'll digest a lot of these different examples. But overall, what are you convinced? What do you think has been going on?
Well, it's a hard question to answer because I look at it as one huge puzzle, and we get a piece here and a piece there, but you know the puzzle has yet to come together. My personal opinion is that I think that whoever are in these craft are not necessarily extraterrestrials. I think that they may be time travelers who are coming back to see history as it's being made. There's a lot of evidence kind of leaning towards that.
Tell me more.
Well, you know, for instance, to jump ahead a little bit to World War II with the Foo Fighters, I mean, there were reports where the crews of Allied bombers, British and American bombers, would see these fantastic aircraft flying right off their wing, 100, 200 feet off their wing, while they're on bombing missions, while they're dropping their bombs. These strange craft would be flying in formation with them and not interfering. Not taking any kind of action or belligerent action or anything, just flying with them. And all I can think of is if you have a technology that you have an aircraft that can fly at 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 miles an hour or just disappear, you're moving so fast, why would you want to get so close to an airplane that's only going 300 miles an hour other than just to observe what's going on?
Well, that's true. I mean, and they were all sizes, weren't they?
All sizes, all shapes. A lot of the Foo Fighters were described as orbs of light, but others were, the British used to describe them as unguided rockets, believe it or not. But they were rocket shaped that used to, once again, fly in formation with Allied bombers. There were large craft that were seen with portholes, with beings looking out of the portholes. Just an amazing array of different shapes and sizes of Foo Fighters during World War II.
Why don't they seem to get involved in these world events? You know, in some cases we've heard stories, Mac, that they've flown over missile silos and they've stopped or shut down launches just to prove a point. But overall, during periods of conflict, they don't seem to get involved. Why not?
Well, again, if we go to the time traveler theory, you know, that old paradox that you can go back in time but you can't change anything. I think it might be something along those lines. Or I just really kind of see them as maybe, you know, historians coming back to see if coming back from our future to see history as it's being made. And they just stand off. They observe. They have this reason to watch us, you know, as we prepare or as we're killing each other during wartime. It's really kind of a strange situation, but I would like to know the answer. Maybe someday we will, but now I can only speculate.
You tracked down a case of a man who shot down or tried to shoot at a UFO in flight during what period? World War One?
World War One. At the beginning of World War One, when German Zeppelins were able to make it the round trip from Germany to London and back and drop bombs on London in 1914, the British Air Force had yet to come up with a way to shoot down Zeppelins. Later on, they would come up with a way basically putting incendiary bullets in their machine guns and lighting the Zeppelins on fire. But Before that, all they could really do is send up airplanes at night as a kind of crude early warning system to at least let people know that a Zeppelin was on its way. So in this particular case, it was in January of 1914, a pilot was up in his basically unarmed plane, and he saw what he thought was a Zeppelin over London. But as he got closer to it, he described it as a railway car with lights and windows and lights and seeing, you know, beings within. And thinking it was still some kind of a German weapon, he took out the only weapon he had, which was a pistol, and fired at it. And as soon as he did that, this craft took off at tremendous speed. And it took off so quickly, he thought that he was disoriented, and he thought he was crashing, and he actually wound up crashing into a marsh. And as it turned out, that was the first instance that we found of someone shooting at a UFO in flight.
He's lucky it didn't annihilate him, Mac.
Right. Well, that's always a concern, too. I mean, that comes up later on in the 50s when there were so many UFO sightings, especially over Washington in the early 50s, that President Truman gave out a secret order that didn't stay secret very long. And what it was to all U.S. fighter pilots was, if you see a UFO, if you can't, quote unquote, talk it down, then you should shoot it down. And a lot of people, when that leaked out, a lot of people became very concerned because they said, maybe we shouldn't be shooting at these things because they seem to have such advanced technology they could, you know, turn us into a crisp. So that was definitely a concern later on.